Orbit Spaceman Show. And on this episode, I've got Jay Athavada on the show, right? So what's up, man?
Acevedo. I like the brand new. People be coming up with these versions that make me sound more and more Italian, which is totally fine with me.
Yeah.
But no, thanks for having me in this closet.
right, because we're
in at Theater Works.
Right. We're
if
we
need the Wi-Fi, it's right. The modem is right next to me.
Right,
but no, I appreciate you having me on.
It's no problem, man. I definitely enjoy having great comics, you know, on the show and everything like that. Basically, one great thing about having you here on the show is that whenever you come to Memphis, you're being from Chicago. I guess it can't get any creepier than being stuck in a room with a black dude in a closet.
No, I've been stuck in weirder places with black dudes. This is nothing.
Cool. I guess my first question being for you.
Sure.
How'd you get into doing stand-up?
I started when I was 16 years old. I'm 25 now, so I'm going on 9 years. I think I knew from a very early age, I think my parents knew too, that I wanted to do something that involved talking in front of a lot of people, because I would never stop talking.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I don't really talk about this that much, but I really do have to give credit to my sister, because I don't think if it weren't my older sister, my only sister, I don't think if it weren't for my sister, I wouldn't have known that I wanted to do any sort of, like, entertainment or just comedy or anything in general like that, because when I was a kid, she would force me to, so we had this, like, little apartment neighborhood in Chicago, or neighborhood apartment in Chicago. It was a very small neighborhood, small apartment, and it was a very small, like, living room, and there was, like, an awning. It was, like, an entrance to, like, where you could step into the, like, if you, put 1 foot in the living room and 1 foot in the dining room. It was a very small apartment, and what she did was she would get bed sheets, and she would cover the awning. So to create, like, the effect of, like, a stage.
Okay.
So these would be stage curtains. And then she would put, like, all our stuffed animals behind, behind me, or, like, in front of the curtain. And then she would just get, like, the family camcorder and just, like, record me.
Nice.
And would just be like, go. So that's why I grew up not being afraid of, like, being in front of a camera or being in front of an audience. And, like, I was that kid who, like, I memorized every line on Space Jam. And would just, like, watch Space Jam in my living room at 3 years old and just reenact the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then there was a lot of that going on. I sang when I was a kid. I was just very silly. I was the class clown forever. Just, I was never, no one knew me other than, like, I was the class clown every grade. And I think when I got to about sixth or seventh grade, I found out what improv was. And I knew that I enjoyed doing it, and I got my first taste in high school, and then from that point, I hit an open mic, and, you know, a lot of my stand-up is rooted in improv, so that transition was smooth, but, because, you know, for a lot of people, when you're improvising, you're with a group,
right.
You have a group to blame.
Right, you gotta
when
work
you're
off,
doing stand-up,
work off with everybody.
Yeah, but when you're doing stand-up, you just have yourself, so I enjoyed having that freedom of, like, the same concept of, like, walking on a tight rope with no net underneath, but being by yourself.
Okay.
So I enjoyed that challenge, and I think that transition was smooth. And like I said, improv is a big part of my stand-up now. But I started doing stand-up at 16, and I remember sneaking into, like, bars and stuff, and just fucking getting in there, telling my jokes, and leaving. And, you know, I really don't think about that often, of how many open mics I went to with my mom.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I was determined. I was a determined kid who just wanted.
Well, it's definitely paying off, man.
Because,
you know, being here at the Memphis Comedy Festival, there's a lot of great comics, you know, that's out here. And one thing I was going to mention, too, about, because you mentioned improv or whatever, and how that's a big part of your stand-up and everything like that. Would you say that improv is the basis of your stand-up, you know? Or would you say more of, like, a... So I guess you say, like, an adapting, like, a like a SNL type of thing, you sure. know, to a stand-up or whatnot, you know what I mean? More of like a sketch kind of thing to a
stand-up. I use improv as a tool to develop material. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily write, and I think I have a lot of friends that get mad at that mm-hmm. because they could be at home and they could spend hours in their notebook writing as many bits as they can. But for me, like, I write ideas down on my phone, and, you know, everybody's process is different. But for me, what works most is I just write down an idea or a thought, and then I just go up, and then I just, work you know, work it out there.
Right.
I just write on stage. I start with a like premise, and then I... Yeah, exactly. And like, I think that has really helped me get better, not only at crowd work, but it's also helped me become a better storyteller because, you know, I'd rather tell a story having not prepared it
right.
or not know what I'm going to say because it feels raw, it feels real, it feels honest, as opposed to something that you just keep rehearsing over and over. And, but I'd say improv is like 50% of my stand-up. The other 50 is just like what I feel or what I believe in at that certain point in time or what's bothering me or what I've been through. But improv definitely helps elevate the quality of my stand-up and how I approach it.
Okay, definitely. And being a Chicago comic, what do you say, I guess, is the biggest and, like, toughest thing you come and run into? Basically, coming from Chicago, because Chicago is a tough town to do comedy in. So,
sure, sure.
You got a lot of legends and stuff that come from there.
I think it's just one of those things where you, like, you don't have too much time to read history because you're too busy trying to write it.
Right. And that's a good way to put it. That's
yeah, it's Chicago is a great stepping stone for a lot of comedians, but for me, that's like home, mm-hmm. and I'm born and raised, and that's where, you know, I want to live in Chicago for the rest of my life, mm-hmm. but I'm not too focused on becoming the best stand-up that Chicago has to offer. Yeah. I really focus on, like I want to be one of the most recognizable comedians in the world.
Right.
You know, I think my stuff is, and it's been proven in the past, my stuff travels well. Like, it's universal, and, like, I have the ability to appeal to a lot of different audiences.
Right.
And I think I'm really set on just, again, being able to appeal to everybody, but also having that, like, I think I am somewhat of an acquired taste, but I think my personality offstage is somewhat the same onstage. It's a little heightened, but, like, I think I'm just, like, an easily... Is that arrogant to say that I'm, like, an easily likable dude? Like, I'm not hard to approach.
Yeah.
And I feel like the reason people are so comfortable around me, like, either on or offstage, is because I'm not, like, I treat you like you know me.
Mm.
So I already treat you like... Like, we've known each other for a while, and I'm never serious. Half the shit I say should never be taken seriously. I'm very silly, and, you know, I think when you're younger, doing anything for a laugh sounds okay, but when you get older, it kind of sounds like, you know, do you have limits or whatever?
Yeah.
But for me, I really do feel like I try to do as much as I can to get a laugh out of someone or an audience.
Yeah. And then another thing, too, is that with... Being able to have the voice that you have, because you have an amazing voice, being able to sing on stage and everything like that.
I think everybody gets something out of it.
Yeah, because you have that, and then you have being able to be bilingual and things like that, too.
Yeah.
And to do those kind of jokes, because me personally, a lot of people know the show. Like, know where I live at is, like, they call it Little Havana, basically.
Oh, really?
And so there's lots of bars and stuff that are around there. And they go to comedy shows and things like that, too.
Yeah.
And so it's cool to be able to have that here because you don't see it in a lot in, I guess you say, in Memphis anyway, a lot in the normal parts of the city, I guess, if you want to say that.
Right.
And so, like, even, like, the first time that I met you up there at PNH, getting the laughs that you got, you know what I mean, off of the Spanish jokes that you did when you first came up was really nice, and it was really great to see that because, one, we never hardly have any Spanish or any, you know, Latin descent or anything like that.
Yeah.
Proper way.
That's just fucking with white people, though.
Yeah.
I really enjoy fucking with white people, because their time is coming in terms of, like, Latinos are quickly becoming the majority in this country, so they better start getting used to, you know, learning the language.
Right. Right. Right, because I guess, you know, for one, for white people, too, you know, they're never going to figure out Ebonics, so I guess they have to.
Yeah, ignorance don't work no more, and, you know, if you need directions, or if you, like, if you want to be a part of the conversation, then learn another language.
Yeah, right, right. And it's like, it's almost kind of, you know, in one of those ways to where it's like, it's America. It's like, how do we not know to speak other languages anyway?
And I think it's gratifying for a white person to insult someone in their native tongue.
Right.
Yeah, I love when white people get mad and they, you know, if a white person can curse me out in Spanish, more power to you. I'll help you build the wall.
Right.
That's cool.
Definitely, man. So I got some random questions that I always like to ask my guests when they come on the show. One of those random questions is going to be, if you had to choose any other city in the United States or whatever to have come from besides the state that you came from, the city that you come from, what would you pick?
Ooh. Probably, that's a good question. Is it possible to have a three-way tie?
First time for everything, man.
I'd probably do either Miami, Portland, or Los Angeles.
Okay. Alright.
Yeah. I think I recently toured Portland in December, and I'm going back to do a week at a club at Harvey's in Portland. Shout out to Harvey's. They take care of the comics real well. It's such a good time. Such a good room for comedy. Portland is just, again, it's one of those things where you don't really get too many Latino comics out there, so it's always a treat for them, because it's like, well, we don't know about this life, we don't know about this culture, but, like, I think Portland is just such a, it's a weird place, but it's also a friendly weird. I think Portland definitely would have, if I had come from Portland, I think my voice would have been, like, my point of view would have been a little more gentrified.
Yeah.
I think I would have been a little privileged if I had lived in Portland. Miami, I don't know why I said Miami, so I'm just going to take Miami out. Fuck Miami. But Los Angeles makes sense because, you know, I'm able to do more than one thing. I pride myself on, like, comparing myself to, like, you know, I feel like I'm, like, a Colombian Donald Glover. Like, I can write, I can do stand-up, I can sing, I can act, I can, you know, improvise. I could do more than one thing. And I think coming from Los Angeles would have been a smooth transition because, you know, it's like you're bringing so much from L.A. and that mentality of being having to really focus on being able to do more than one thing and bringing it to Chicago where, you know, there's a niche for everybody. There's improv, there's sketch, there's stand-up. But in Chicago, a lot of people pride themselves on doing all three. But I think coming from L.A., that would have been a major impact, having been already doing that, having already been accustomed to doing more than one thing from the beginning. But I wouldn't have it any other way being from Chicago. Like, I'm from Chicago, you know, I live by two words, you know, fuck you, pay me. And I feel like I'm like the Kanye West of comedy. I have way too much confidence. I don't question my abilities. I'm very, like, if I weren't me and I saw myself performing, I'd want to be me. Like, it's just too much. And it's like, it's that Chicago mentality of, like, work. I don't talk. And if I do talk, I got the work and then everything else that I've done to back it up. But it's all about working and not complaining about it, not getting tired about it. You know, you just work until the day that you die. You work.
That's cool, man, because it's like, I guess you see a lot of comics have gotten away from putting in that full grind. And you can, like, I guess it shows, you know?
Yeah.
Or they either put in a few, like, the years of hard work, and then it just, like, falls off.
Well, it's like, you don't stop when you get to whatever point you want to get to, because you want to keep evolving. So whatever goal that you meet, you have another goal that comes out of that, or you want to achieve something new. And it's like, oh, what if you've achieved everything you wanted to achieve? Well, it's like, I'm never done trying to outdo myself. I'm never going to feel
Like you, satisfied. You've made it. Like, yeah. Like, you, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm never, I'm always going to want more.
Right.
And I'm always hungry and I'm always, you know, so dead set on, like, it might be disastrous to have this kind of mentality, but I think ever since I was a kid, I was encouraged to do more than one thing, but I also had this, like, thing within me where, like, I can't do something unless I'm going to be considered one of the greatest to do it.
Right.
And that's, like, a lot, that's, I think for a lot of people that scares them or that makes them nervous or, like, it's kind of like there's pressure involved with that, but I don't see any of that. I see it as just, like, I know my abilities,
right.
And I know that I'm getting stronger and better every time I go up on stage.
Right.
Again, it's all about outdoing yourself artistically, you know,
and making sure that you have that actual confidence when you go on stage yourself, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just in general, because it's like, I think a lot of people don't have the confidence in themselves on a daily basis.
Yeah,
like being able to have the confidence in yourself on a daily basis and then take that to the stage, it shines even more.
You know I mean, I'm doing shit outside of comedy to help me. Like, I'm doing yoga.
Yeah.
Like, but going to, like, I've been to
shit on your back.
Yeah. But I've been to Austin, Mexico City, and now Memphis, and that's not helping because of all the food that's involved with those trips. But when I get back, I'm back on the grind. Yeah. But yoga really has been helping lift up my spirits and, like, keep me level-headed and just calm and, you know, accepting of, like, what is life right now and what it's becoming. And I think at the end of the day, I'm just really trying my best to improve who I am as a person so that I could be the best one on stage.
Right. Okay. That definitely makes sense. Definitely, because it's like a full body movement.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So, who would you say is your biggest influence as far as comedy goes? But I'll put it like on a giant scale. Say like on comedy, music, and then in art as a whole. Like
all three. Like one person for all three. Or three people and
three people. But okay. If you could pick one, who would you pick?
In music, it's definitely Kanye because just like, again, him being able to. A lot of people were like, "You can't. You're a producer. You can't rap."
Right.
But then he was just like, "Well, I just revitalized Jay-Z's career, so might as well drop my own album when nobody believes in me."
Right.
You know, 5 beats a day for 3 summers kind of mentality of like, I believe in my shit. And I'm going to put my shit out there, and it dropped number one, and then he's never not had a number one album. So definitely, that mentality of, like, there's a lot of outdoing yourself, and, like, even with, like, Kids See Ghosts with the Kid Cudi collaboration, the song that really did it for me was Rebirth, because I think last year was, like, the hardest year I've ever had in terms of, like, adulthood.
Yeah.
Like, I thought I was going to quit comedy. My uncle died, and this is the first 2 weeks of the year. My uncle died. I was told that I had to put my dog down. My sister had a miscarriage. I got my heart broken for the first time in my life ever. And I went through months of just, like, unemployment, lying in bed all day, not wanting to do anything. I didn't want to do comedy. I didn't feel happy doing comedy. I felt like I had wasted my life doing comedy. But then I pulled a Chappelle. I went home. I went back to Columbia for 12 days. And there's something about being surrounded by not just family, but, like, nature, just, like, mountains and just, like, being surrounded it's not that I needed a different setting to run away from my problems so that the problems would still be there. I think I just needed a moment or just a, not only did I need like a
time to like reset there.
Well, it was just like a period of like fresh air, but also a period of like reflection and like really digging deep into, you know, into the roots of who I am and like why I was feeling the way I was feeling. And, I came back reborn. I came back with a bigger sense of purpose. And I think, you know, why would I feel like I had wasted my years if I loved what I was doing?
Right.
So I think, that period in my life really helped shape how I approach my material now and, like, what I write about. And, yeah, it doesn't matter what may happen offstage, how hurt I may be or how depressed I may be or whatever I may be going through, because when I'm on stage, nobody can hurt me.
No, no.
But I think at the end of the day, I don't go up on stage because it's a hobby or because I can do it better than somebody else or any of that. I think I just go up on stage because that's how I stay alive. So, and that's real shit. That's like, you know, I don't, if there weren't some sort of outlet for me to go up in front of people and talk, I think I would have shot myself by now. But, you know, without stand-up, because it's the purest form of comedy. It's just your unfiltered thoughts in front of people you don't know. And in a short amount of time, they get to know you.
Right.
And they either... And I have that... I think I have that ability for people to get... Like, they love me, hate me, and then love me at the end. So, it's a roller coaster of just emotion and raw thought. And, again, I think it's the purest form of comedy. But when it comes to... So, music, Kanye. Or even fucking... I think Curtis Mayfield, too.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. First time I got that one. First time.
Yeah, I think Curtis, because they're both from Chicago, mm-hmm. Curtis was just a poetic genius. I think he was one of those people that he just understood what it meant to feel through not only your voice, but through instruments and just like this, the organization of like a piece. And like his first album, I think, is one of the greatest albums of all time. To see the way that he would, you know, collaborate with a band, like, inside a studio, from the moment he was writing the lyrics to the moment that they were recording takes of, like, the band going through whatever the song may have been. It's just amazing to see someone with that vision and just that drive and that mentality of, like, I might not know how to play the instruments, but I know the way they should sound.
Right.
And I just love seeing someone take command of that. That's why I feel like when I'm doing stand-up, it's like I'm doing jazz. Where it's like I'm playing, like the audience is my instrument.
Right,
it's like I'm going off of that.
And it's like you know what keys to hit to make them laugh.
Yeah, and it's all timing. I mean, why do you think, you know, in the 20s and 30s or whatever it was, a lot of jazz musicians had comedians open for them in the clubs? Because they just set the tone, but also just, like, stand-up is jazz, and it's spoken word.
Right.
That's what it is. That's why jazz
I've never actually heard it put that way.
That's why jazz and stand-up go so well, because jazz is free-form improvisations on drugs.
Yeah.
I could just take out the word jazz and replace it with stand-up.
Yeah.
So that's the way I see it. I'm also, like, I don't know how to play any instruments, but I can sing. My dad played the trumpet before I was even born. He was in Latin jazz band.
Okay.
And then my grandfather, his dad, was a preacher. So I have that, like, this combo of, like, commanding a room, whatever room I may be in, forcing people to listen, but then enjoying it. And then I also have, like, again, that jazz in my blood, that being able to, like, you know, mesmerize and, like, being able to create something from nothing. Comedy, I think, it's really hard because I'm influenced by a lot of people. I can give you a lot of people that I'm influenced by, and then someone who just, like, really hits it on that, but, like, Andy Kaufman, Lenny Bruce, Sam Kinison, Freddie Prinze, Red Fox is someone that I've gotten compared to Red Fox, and I think that's nuts, because I love Red Fox, so I don't know.
It's funny that you mention a lot of older ones, even, like, with Red Fox, because, like, nowadays you hear a lot of comics, they are like, oh, well, I guess they start in, like, the 80s, you know what I mean?
And sure.
And then they go from, sure, there, from that point on. But that's cool for you to name, like, some, like, older comics and stuff like that, too.
Yeah, I'm that nightclub mentality of, like, there were no comedy clubs. There were just nightclubs.
Right.
Or speakeasies. And these motherfuckers would just go in and crack some jokes. It's all about that entertainment value as opposed to, like,
production value.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's all about, like, just, it's that entertainment aspect. That's what I describe it when I'm like, that's the difference sometimes in Chicago. Like, if you're performing in a north side room, they care about your material. Yeah. If you're in a south side room in front of a black crowd, they don't give a shit about your material. They care about whether or not you're putting yourself, like, physically into your material. They want to see you entertain. Like, if you're not sweating by the end of your set, then you didn't do a, you didn't do a good job.
Right.
That's how I measure my shit. That's why performing in front of black crowds made me stronger.
Yeah.
Because I put a lot of emotion and feeling into my jokes.
I get, and it's funny you say that, I get that a lot, too, myself, being a comic myself, doing different rooms and things like that, or whatever, but interviewing lots of different comics, I hear that a lot. It's like, oh, doing, like, primarily black rooms, it's like, if they don't like it, they don't like it.
Yeah, they'll let you know. What I mean?
Yeah, and they're like, yeah, like you said, and they'll let you know.
White people just lie.
Yeah.
Oh, that was all right. Yeah. That was good.
I'm going to continue to set this seltzer.
Yeah, exactly. But for music, comedy, I think my biggest one would be, it's like a tie between Pryor and Chris Rock, because I feel like I just see a lot of myself in a lot of the material that they do, because there's so many things that I see that I could easily apply to Latino people. But Pryor, I think, was... I like Pryor because there's a... I forgot which special it is, but they're interviewing a bunch of people outside of the theater before they start the show. And a lot of people, it's mostly white people, and they're all saying the same shit. They're like, I don't care if he's black, you know? I think he's one of the greatest comedians of all time. Or like, he's the comedian of the 80s. Like, you know, it's not, it doesn't matter that he's black. He's just really funny. And I'm like, that's what I want.
Yeah.
I don't want to be labeled as a Latino comic.
Right.
I just want to be labeled as, oh, that motherfucker's funny.
Right.
Like, that's all I want. I don't want to be pigeonholed. I want to be able to be on the same lineup. I don't need to be on a lineup that's diverse heavy. I just want to be on a lineup that's funny.
Right. Okay, so with that being said, where do you see yourself, I guess you say, because basically you're saying you separate yourself basically from like just the Latino aspect of comedy, but and just putting yourself as a in the whole aspect of comedy.
Yeah.
Whatever. But I guess my question is, I was going to ask, was where do you see yourself in the Latino aspect of comedy
itself? I'm proud of my culture. Yeah. I'm not trying to sweep that under the rug or anything like that. But I don't like to be defined as one thing.
Right.
I want my material to be able to transcend race. I feel like I do transcend race. I feel like I don't want to say I'm the OJ of comedy, but, like, you know, people don't see a black guy. They see OJ.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Juice.
That's what I'm saying. So I don't want to be, he's Latino, but that's Jason.
Right.
That has nothing to do with, he's proud of where he's from and where his family's from, but, you know, I focus more on, and I don't really think I focus more on what I think the audience is going to laugh at. I'm selfish. I focus mostly on what I think is funny, but also, like, just real shit. It doesn't have to be relatable, but it can be like, oh, I've never thought of something like that way. Or, like, why the fuck would he be thinking that? Or, like, you know, he's got a point. Those are the reactions that I want.
Right.
I don't want things to be too unfamiliar. But if we have to talk about things that they don't know anything about, and that's fine. Because I'm not trying to educate. I'm just trying to open eyes sometimes.
Okay.
But I definitely, again, I don't even think I'm a comedian. I don't consider myself... Comedian is a weird word for me, because I feel like I'm in the middle of, like an artist and a performer. So I'm in the middle, but I guess the middle is a comedian.
Well, I mean, I guess I can see where you're coming from, because it's like, I guess if you say, like, well, I'm a comedian, then that kind of labels you as one thing.
Yeah, whereas it makes you seem, like, one-dimensional.
Right, yeah. Whereas you say, I'm an entertainer, it can
exactly
a broad spectrum of things.
I'm able to do more than... I think my set has been described where I try to show you everything that I can do as a performer within whatever time that I'm given. And then I leave you wondering if I could have done more.
Right. Right. All right, man. Definitely. Let's see. I got one last question for you. And that's going to be one of these random questions, too, by the way.
Do it.
So, okay. So, well, actually, it's two.
Okay, that's fine. Get your money's worth. I'm leaving.
So, first question is, how would you ever be on a show like, say, like Roast Battle? I know if you say you've done it, you look like shows before, right?
I did. I won it last night.
Right. Okay. So, like,
no big deal.
How do you feel about those kind of shows?
I'm fine.
Like doing those roast insult comedy shows.
I like it. I love getting. I'm from Chicago, so I don't really feel like anybody can beat me. Yeah. I feel very untouchable when I go into. And you know, it's funny. It's not even the fact that I'm from Chicago. It's just because I grew up with wrestling.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm used to watching wrestlers insult each other.
Yeah.
So, it's just, like, second nature. It's not hard to insult somebody. And my mind goes into this different... My brain just taps into this chamber of, like, just fucking brutality. And just, like, it just... There's no holding back once I get into that fucking chamber of just whatever it is. And I don't hold back. I don't feel bad. It's a killer's mentality of like, no, you can't tell me anything. So, and it's also just like, it's this thing of like, I want a Yo Mama like battle, yeah. Yo Mama Joe battle in Scotland.
What?
In front of a sold out 500 seat bingo hall. And that all that shit was improvised. We would just get a suggestion, like, book a category, and then we would just go off of that. And I won based off of that. Because ain't nobody in Scotland going to tell me about my mom. That shit ain't going to fly out there.
Yeah.
So it was the same thing with this. When I saw that I was paired against Ian Aber, or Abers, Aber? He's a great guy. Great comic. He's a really nice guy. But when I found out that I was against him, some people who were also in the show were like, oh, we didn't write any roast for you because we just assumed you're not going to beat him. So when I heard that, I was just like, well, this is the first time we're meeting. I'm from Chicago, and we don't lose. Mm. And I didn't. So the person that I got paired up with in the final after I beat Ian, she didn't have any jokes prepared because she wasn't expecting all of them. And I didn't have any jokes written for her until the night of, while she was up on stage, once I found out she was going to win. And that was it. You're telling me it's going to be difficult to make fun of a white girl? Fuck out of here. I think it's going to be more difficult for you to find out that I'm not Mexican
yeah.
and that I'm Colombian. Yeah. Would love to see your reaction to that. And we did. And I won. And I respectfully dropped the mic.
Nice. Nice, man. let's see. What was my last question was, if you had to choose any stage... grand stage to be on or anything like that and any network to be on.
Sure.
What would be that grand stage and that network to be on?
The network, I would love to be on HBO. Mm-hmm. Just because of that classic
hang on a second. You're basically like the first person. You're the first person to say HBO. Everybody else is like
Netflix.
Nah, like yeah. Well no, they either Hulu. Say Netflix or they go Comedy Central. Or, I have someone that say Showtime, or whatever, which I'm like, okay. Showtime, what?
Sure.
What?
They're doing a comedy porn special?
Yeah.
After hours.
And then, what is it? I actually had one to go for Hulu.
Hell yeah.
So.
No, HBO is just that classic, I have that old school ambition of, like, you know, that was the big time.
Yeah.
Was when you got your first HBO special. And I think that's how I would want it to be. I would want my first special to be an HBO exclusive special. And Netflix is cool, but for me to be able to start with HBO would be an absolute dream come true. But I think the place that I would want to play the most... Man, it's hard because Madison Square Garden is amazing. The Comedy Store in L.A. But I feel like the place that would make the most sense is, you know, I'm a sucker for hometown shit. So I would love to play the Chicago Theater. I graduated on that stage from college, so it would be a nice, like, you know, my life came full circle.
Yeah.
You know, I got my degree here. And now I'm performing in front of a sold-out hometown crowd, and I get to have deep dish after.
Nice, nice.
That would be the dream.
Cool. Well, man, I definitely can't wait to come up to Chicago and see you do some work up there.
Hell yeah.
And hopefully, maybe get to open for you one day.
Hell yeah, bro. You know what I mean? Hell yeah.
And get some deep dish pizza, because the pizza we have here is delicious. But
it's, you know, I'm mad. I was mad that it was good.
Yeah. Why? Why?
I'm just was like, well, Memphis does pizza well.
Because, yeah. Like, what is it? I think the, you got the Hot Wing Festival. You got that coming up, too, so you should definitely
come back for
that. No, here in Memphis.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So
the Hot Wings were a little disappointing at Alex's. I don't know if they're a sponsor, but I've had
them. No, they're not. And they're not. And they're,
but the pizza here was surprisingly real good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, I'm mad.
Yeah. Did you get a barbecue pizza? What kind of pizza you get?
Barbecue pizza?
You come to Memphis, you got to get a barbecue pizza.
I'm just going to get barbecue. it's just the pizza that they ordered here that they provided us with here at the Memphis Comedy Fest. They had that high school lunch pizza.
Was it?
The high school lunch pizza? The cafeteria pizza?
Oh, okay.
They had it at High Tone?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Man, dude, that shit took me back to second grade.
Yeah.
Like, it felt like 9/11 all over again.
Yeah.
I was great. Not 9/11, yeah. But the pizza. The pizza. It was great.
Yeah. Definitely, man. Well, hopefully you can find some more good food spots around here.
9/11 was bad. I just want to clarify.
Just the pizza.
The pizza's great.
Early 2000s pizza.
Oh, yeah. It was good. It was good.
Yeah. They had all the good trans fats and stuff in it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, definitely want to have a big thanks for and appreciation for you coming on the show,
thanks
man.
Thanks for having me, man.
And everything like that, dude. Tell everybody where they can find you and everything like that.
It's just at @JAYSON and then avocado, AVOCADO, @ Jason Avocado on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and then JasonAvocado.com. My first comedy special. Called Lonely Wit, a completely improvised hour of stand-up comedy with a musical accompaniment.
Okay.
Comes out 4/20 on my website, $5. And, yeah, it'd be cool if you can support that. And eventually it'll be out on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, and all that stuff. But right now we're just focusing on seeing how much we can sell on my website.
Awesome.
But, yeah, if you can check that out, Lonely Wit. And, yeah.
Definitely cool. Everybody, you hear that? Where to go check them out at? Where to find them? Definitely go check out this special on the website coming up. And don't be a broke ass and pay the $5 and watch this funny ass shit. You need to do it. And definitely appreciate you having you here at the Memphis Comedy Festival.
Hell yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. And when you ever get the chance, always come back, man.
I will. So. I will. Defend my crown.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely do that. Definitely. All right, man.